Welcome to tonight's episode of Nocturnal Emissions. I am your host, Isabella L. Price. I have a great guest on tonight, Adrian Clark, a dear friend of mine. We were on some panels together and we started chatting and I was like, please come into my podcast so that we can actually do this in front of other people. And she said yes. She works at the Museum of Popular Culture, also known as the MoPOP here in Seattle. And we talk about, what do we talk about? Ryan Reynolds' abs, and we talk about Stephen King, we talk about R.L. Stein, we talk about a whole bunch of great stuff. It's fantastic. I hope you enjoy the episode. We have a bit of technical difficulties at the end of the episode, which is a huge bummer because we were having a great conversation, and then everything gets all like sticky wicket at the end of it, which is a bummer, but you can find all of Adrian Clark's information in the show notes. You can find her at October_country on Instagram, at Adrian_edits on Twitter. And yeah, but I'll have all that information for you, so make sure that you get that. She's incredible. She's really hilarious. Don't forget to follow me on social medias as well. My website, isabellalprice.com, for different pieces of writing on horror and such. You can also find me on Instagram, Isabella L. Price on Instagram, Twitter, NOCEMISS, and also the Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook. Follow me. Also, Nocturnal Emissions Show on YouTube. I got some new videos coming up for you guys, and I'm very excited about it because it's taking me so long. I don't know how to edit. But I'm trying, I'm doing it, and it's working out somewhat. I don't know. Anyway, with no further ado, here is tonight's episode. Enjoy! All right, thank you guys so much for joining me for another episode of Nocturnal Emissions Radio. I'm glad to be back. I have another special guest that I'm so excited for. We were on the same panel at Crypticon. I've seen this person around on the interwebs doing some hot stuff, and I'm so excited that I finally get the chance to sit down and talk to this person about horror movies and the latest things that are going on. Without further ado, guest, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Adrian Clark. I'm so glad to be here. Who am I? Let's see. I work for the Museum of Pop Culture, formerly EMP Museum, down at the Seattle Center. I'm their content manager currently, but actually, and this is news even for you, is I was recently offered a position on the curatorial team. So I'll be thank you. I'll be moving to that team next month. So nice. Have a little bit of senioritis going on, but it's not too bad. You know how it is. And that's if you know, other than that, I'm always horroring around. I write for a few websites, Nightmarish Conjurings being the most recent one, as well as Horror Novel Reviews. And I used to write for Addicted to Horror Movies, but their owner passed not too long ago. So that site's kind of like transitioning and finding its feet. So I'm giving them that space to do that. So those are kind of my current hangs.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll put links in the show notes so that everybody can find where you are. So with the MoPOP, if people don't really know, what's casually called the MoPOP here in Seattle, is like a pop culture. It's like a pop culture. What would you call it? I mean, it's a museum, but it kind of feels like this, like if we were going to send all of our best pop culture into space to preserve it, it's like this little bubble of like, please preserve these precious items from pop culture so that the aliens will know who we are.
Totally. It's kind of like a modern day time capsule.
It is.
Things that we like, that we care about. Not that other museums don't have that, but it's definitely a different take. And it evolved. It started as the Experience Music Project, and it started with an emphasis on experiencing music with an emphasis on local musicians like Jimi Hendrix, and actually was going to be a Jimi Hendrix museum first. And then it kind of evolved from there. So we have changed our name, but really the name was catching up to what we were already providing the community. So we're really excited.
Yeah, because there's different kind of sections in the museum. There's a music section, there is a video game, indie game section, which I really, really like, and it's always like it's super full all the time. There is a science fiction section, a fantasy section, and my favorite section, obviously, the horror section.
Mine too, yep.
And there's also these kind of roving exhibits as well. There was a Star Trek one that was super cool. The Muppets one I really liked as well. What was the last one that I just went to?
Marvel.
Marvel, yes, it was the Marvel one, which was really, really dope. And there's also a what's called the Sky Church, right, where they have these big it's this big screen, and they have these really great film screenings and different things like that. And like during the month of October, they always have some really great, they have these, it's not sleepover, you're not sleeping there, but it's kind of like a sleepover.
Yeah, we call them campout cinema. So it's like the outdoor movie experience inside. And that whole month of October is programmed. Well, currently, I guess it's programmed by our programs manager, Robert Rutherford. And he's a horror lover. We like sit and we type and we slack about all the horror movies. So he's pretty legit.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool because there was a couple of months ago, was it last year, that you guys had like a slight updating to the horror section,
Yes, we did.
which was so cool. There's this new bust of Mary Shelley. It's gorgeous, and there is this like Dracula vampire section that's brand new, which is also mind-blowingly gothic and lush. And blood, there's like blood platelets all over the place. Like, it's such a cool exhibit because so rarely do museums really take that kind of seriously, I feel like, you know? And so a lot of the times, horror is kind of, it's a small thing, but it feels like the MoPub really takes it, the genres, fantasy, science fiction, and horror, very seriously, which I appreciate.
I would agree. And actually, what's funny about the horror exhibit is you're totally right. The original one, Can't Look Away, the Lure of Horror Film, opened in 2011. And I didn't work for the museum at the time, but I remember the impact of seeing the thing I care about the most treated with such respect, that I knew it was a special place, and I knew I wanted to work there. And now the update, I mean, it was time for a refresh and just kind of examine some new things. And exactly that, it was done with the same, reverence, and a little tongue in cheek too. We don't try to take ourselves too seriously. But Jacob McMurray, our director of curatorial affairs, did the update, and he did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, because in horror movies, so much we have this. It's such a local kind of a thing. It's like small groups of people who are like, I love this thing, and I'm going to do so much work to preserve the elements of these things. It hasn't really been the priority of too many museums to preserve like props or costumes or anything like that. And so sometimes, like, I'll go to these horror conventions and they'll have like, this is the real prop from such and such. And you find out that it's just been sitting in some dude's like basement or garage this whole time, you know? And so with the MoPub cataloging and acquiring those things is like, it's such an important part of film history to have somebody preserving those items, you know?
Totally. I completely agree. And I think that moving forward, especially as we like move into this, I don't want to even call it a horror renaissance. Horror has always been around, but I think there's been a larger kind of understanding of its importance. And I think that we'll see a totally different preservation, initiative moving forward. But yeah, there's so many things that I would love to see that probably just got chucked onto the back lot and
Yeah.
who knows where they are now.
Yeah, that stuff is like very, it's weird because it's like it's so important to people who like us, like are horror fans, you know? And I don't think that it's really hit the but film industry is so strange. I mean, like really, it's like you'll make a prop and it's something that it looks like it's very deadly or expensive, and it's just something that's like made out of like two strings and some gum and so
Right. Well, if you get close, we have a whole zombie section in the exhibition currently, and there's like all of the heads that Greg Nicotero made for Walking Dead. And if you get close, which you can't get maybe super close because it's behind plexi, but there are tendons in the neck, and if you get close, they're just white zip ties.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and like some
That's
of the
awesome.
button things is even it's just fabric. It's just shiny fabric, but they
Yeah.
knew it'd be shot far enough away that it would work, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's so awesome. I love the MoPop. I try to go as regularly as I possibly can. So, awesome. So you write about horror movies. Is there anything in particular that you feel like is your kind of like your area of expertise?
Well, actually, it's funny. I should have mentioned this before, but I write about horror movies, but I actually have more often or more consistently written about horror paperbacks,
Okay.
specifically from like the 70s and 80s, which recently became like a thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was just doing it over on Horror Novel Reviews, writing, you know, zany reviews of these books that some of which aren't of great quality, but have insane plots, right? And so my kind of angle was, you want to know what happened in this book, but you don't want to read it. Trust me. So I'm just going to spoil it, the house down, and then you'll feel like you read it, and like we both get something out of that.
Right.
But then in 2017, Grady Hendrix, are you familiar with Grady Hendrix? He's a writer. Oh, you should check him out. He's amazing. He writes horror novels of his own, but he wrote a book called Paperbacks from Hell, which is
Oh,
essentially,
yes.
yeah, essentially what I was doing and other people were doing. And so like I was kind of doing it in a vacuum. I'd never thought to really search and see if other people were doing it. But I found out that Grady Hendrix had been reviewing these books for Tor, and he'd been doing it with Will Erickson. He runs a blog called Too Much Horror Fiction down in Portland. And he and I are now friends through this kind of like this opening of a door that was like, hey, there are a bunch of us out here reading these things.
Right.
So I suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, all these people are around. So I've been starting to transition those reviews over to Nightmarish Conjurings, and it's a lot of fun, but it's a slow expertise because you have to read a whole book.
Right.
You know, it's a little bit slower than movies.
Did it have like a boom? I feel like horror paperbacks had a real boom in like the 70s and 80s, and then kind of slowly declined in the 90s and 2000s.
Totally true. So kind of the foundation was set with three books is what they kind of say, which is Rosemary's Baby, The Other, and The Exorcist. And Rosemary's Baby came out, you know, in the 60s. And so I think they all did. But they were this smash hit. They really like, got people excited, and it was this whole other genre that really wasn't represented. And then as more authors started to write about it in the 70s, the marketing, which is really funny, the marketing for these pieces of new books would all have on it, like in the grand tradition of The Exorcist, the other, and Rosemary's Baby, or
Right.
exactly like Rosemary. So this kind of became this kind of like an in joke. And then once you hit the 80s, it was just madness. There were whole publishing companies that would just, you know, basically just throw whatever money they could have at anybody who could write a book, it seemed like, and they would pay for these elaborate covers. Like Zebra was one that is notorious for maybe not the highest quality books.
Okay.
And then by the end of the 80s, the glut was so intense that these things were being thrown into baskets at the end of rows. So there's still some in the early 90s, and I really enjoy some of them. Actually, we can talk about, they're more shocking because it's surprising what problematic stuff is still in them. And you're like, all right, 94, we were still struggling. We're still struggling now. We were really struggling then. But yeah, so then it kind of just fell off, and it's only now kind of recently coming back.
Okay, that's interesting. Because when I think about those books from the horror books from yesteryear, I think of two kind of things. I think of like one, I think they call them like it's like white women running away from castles.
Sure, yes.
It's like, which I love, and I have a folder that's just full of covers of white women running away from castles, and it's just because I think they are so I don't know, aesthetically pleasing. It's just these it's just like these white women in nightgowns, and they're just like looking over their shoulder at a moor, at some dilapidated Gothic manor that they're running away from.
Right. I mean, a great subgenre of, I mean, I think they called it a lot of times Gothic fiction, but what you'll find if you dig deeply in there is like this kind of like trite cover and this kind of thing, which it's incredible. Often a lot of those books were written by women, and so they'd get this nice opportunity to actually write horror because they could hide inside this thing that seemed like safe for women. So there's some badasses in
Yeah,
that
and some
world.
of them are pretty steamy
Oh
too,
yeah.
which was like kind of I really like that. I really like this idea of like you have this the horrific, and some of them that I've read, I don't remember any of the titles. I just like got them from like half-priced books and things like that. And they all have like just bizarre names, you know, like there's one, I think it's called like the Mad L Lampshade. It's something like that. But a lot of it is this very gothic, poetic, almost like Lovecraftian kind of horror of the mind. And then they'll just be like just straight sex, in it, just some bodice ripping. And that to me is like, that's we need more of that. I really like that kind of thing. And then the second kind that I think of are these like horror teen novels. It's a bunch of like sorority girls, and there's like a skeleton on it. There's somebody holding a knife. It's like Sweet Valley High meets Let's Scare Jessica to Death, or some sort of, you know, it's this kind of slasher teen thing. And I always just think of those two as being, that's what I think about when I think of horror paperback.
Nice. And what great things to think of too, because they were so formative. I mean, the classic, right, that everybody remembers is Goosebumps, but like people remember Goosebumps for a reason. It was impactful, it was creative. There were a million of them. Like whatever your spooky, scary thing was, you could find one. You know, if it was blobs, we got you. If it was whales in lakes, done, you know?
And then what was the series? Didn't R.L. Stine have like a teenage series?
Fear Street, I
Theater
think.
Street.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember graduating from Goosebumps to Fear Street.
Yeah,
Like
you felt grown
I'm
up.
finally old enough to read Fear Street books, which was kind of because Goosebumps, I mean, when that Scholastic newspaper would come in,
Totally.
there's just a whole page, and I would just check off each and every Goosebumps, you know. I heard something that he said he was gonna bring. Didn't he say that he was gonna redo Fear Street or bring back Fear Street?
Yeah, something's coming back. It scrolled through my feed. I mean, it doesn't surprise me really, because so many things that like, I mean, we're now like the people with expendable cash, right? We're of that age group, so they're pumping out all the things that we'll feel nostalgia about. I'm not against it. I mean, some of the things are a little weird, but give me more R.L. Stine. I'd love to see him get a chance to do something that's a little less formulaic, you know? I mean, I'm not sure if that's even what he wants to do, but I'd like to see what he would do for adults.
Yeah. Apparently they are filming it for Fox, and they're filming it like right now, because this was announced in April of 2000, 19, April 16th. So that's coming out soon. I mean, I feel like he, well, man, what's the name of the guy? Like Dan Brown. It's just like, this is what I do. It's like just pumping this out. He feels like he has a very strong identity and he's like sticking to it.
Right.
And so honestly, when I was a kid, I didn't even think Earl Stein was like a real dude. I thought it was just the pseudonym for a bunch of people.
Sure. Yeah, like Nancy Drew, right? Like you when you realized that Carolyn Keene wasn't one person.
I just thought like, oh, well, there's just no way that one person is really releasing all of these different kinds of things. And that Arl Stein looks exactly like how you would think he looks. A man who's made his life terrifying and torturing children psychologically, he looks exactly like how you think he would. So.
Yeah, totally. I know. I was not disappointed when I saw him for the first time. Maybe when like the Goosebumps TV show or something came out. I remember him being on TV. I think that what's funny is because I also started reading Stephen King pretty young, but when I talk to people who are maybe 10 years older, like that was kind of their there wasn't a Goosebumps, so they like started right in with that, or the Bodice Rippers, like they started right in with Stephen King and got a lot of the same results. And I'm kind of jealous. I would have liked to have, I don't know, kind of read that in a vacuum. I think it would have been pretty wild, you know?
I mean, I'm going back and I'm for the first time ever, like going through and reading all the major works of Stephen King. And it's interesting. I feel like I can understand how much the current films that are coming out right now were so influenced by King. You can really tell that there's a generation of filmmakers who are probably exactly in that range that you're talking about, like late 30s, early 40s. And they grew up on King, and King has informed their idea of what horror looks like. And so you can see like how influential this person really is to our identity, our thinking of what horror is. But at the same time, I feel like I can tell when he was doing a lot of cocaine in his
Oh
books.
yeah. Where have you gotten it? Are you reading them chronologically?
No, I'm just kind of reading them as I can get them
Nice.
from Libby, the app. And so right now I'm doing Salem's Lot. I just got finished with what was the one before that? I got done with Carrie and Firestarter. And yeah, now I'm on Salem's Lot. So it's just a lot. He loves writing about a down and out author
Yeah, right.
with wife issues, whose children are always dead. And so I'm moving on from that to, I think I'm going to do The Shining next, especially because I really want to read Dr. Sleep. So.
Oh yeah, I read Dr. Sleep a few years ago and I was pleasantly surprised. I wouldn't say it's like, well, this is just kind of an awful thing to say anyway. It's not exactly a sequel. It's not perfect for a sequel to The Shining, but it's really fascinating what he's exploring there, and ultimately it was satisfying. It's
Okay.
good. Yeah.
Yeah,
It's good to follow Danny.
I'm trying to get through to that before the movie comes out. So,
Cool.
but we were talking about this because we were on a Crypticon panel 2 weekends ago. Yeah, 2 weekends ago. So was that your first Crypticon?
It wasn't. I think that was my third, I believe. Yeah, I think it was my third.
And so, how was it for you this year?
Well, I will say I had a great time this year. I want to hear about your experience too, because I was, scrolling your Facebook and I heard maybe you didn't have the best day. We don't have to get into details, but
Woo.
we might have some stories to share. Yeah, I thought it was really good for me this year for a couple of reasons. They reduced the amount of panels, is my understanding, and also reduced the footprint of the con. And I think putting us all closer together, and just like curating the panels a little, culling them down, really helped. And then also I really restricted the amount of panels I would let myself be on, and so that I could have time to support my community and not just like spray information at them. Like, how many times do people need to hear me talk? Not that many. So I was on three panels, and that gave me time to be, you know, to listen, which is very important.
Yeah.
How about you?
I kind of had the opposite experience.
Yeah, okay.
My panels were so on top of each other. Mm-hmm. Or the panels for other people that I wanted to go see were also so on top of each other, that it became really chaotic to try to see everybody. And I think I was part of that culling of, like, when they were, like, shaving down on who should not have panels this year. I was in that pile, I think. And so I haven't, it's so weird. So I've been going for, like, probably the past 4 years, I think. Nice. And I have panels every single year. And it was just a very kind of uncomfortable experience of being like, why wasn't I just wasn't, like, in on things that I normally am allowed to be in on. And that was a very uncomfortable experience for me. But I can give you some real tea once we're in this conversation.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
I'm sorry, names.
Yeah, that sucks that that happened. I mean, I do still like the idea of things being reduced, but that's really disappointing that you didn't get to be a part of it in the same way. I will say, though, I'm glad I got to meet you, because we've been at the same place at the same time several years in a row, and because there was so much going on, I never met you. So that can be a small silver lining. But yeah, it
was great. Like, as soon as, at least for me, as soon as you started talking, I was like, why haven't I met you before? Why? You and I were on the same wavelength. I love your energy. Like, it was, because I feel like there's only so many, like, horror girls in Seattle, you know?
Right.
There's, like, a club of us of, like, girls, women, femmes who are doing horror as, like, either a full-time thing or a side thing, or, you know, engaged in the community somehow. And so I was like, how have we not met before? And then every inappropriate thing that I was saying, you were picking up.
Exactly.
Because I was like, we were talking about, because you were talking about how much you hated the Amityville Horror.
Remix. Yeah. That too. Pull out my air horn. Yeah, remake.
Yes, the remix. Yes. With Pitbull and Daddy Yankee. Yes. We were talking about that, and I was talking about how much, how grateful I was to that movie, because it got me through, shirtless Ryan Reynolds got me through some very dark times.
Yep, and I can feel that for sure. I've never have any qualms with his costumes.
He was good looking in that movie.
I'm glad you added looking, though.
Even I'm so, my jury is so out on Robin, oh my god, on Ryan Reynolds. Like, mm-hmm. I just saw Detective Pikachu, and I'm like, what is your brand, man? Who's
totally.
Your target audience? I don't understand who he's supposed to be for. His sense of humor is very mature. It's too mature for children.
Right.
But I feel like he is targeting himself towards the youths, and I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah, he's a wacky brand, which, just for anyone listening, is my only problem. Like, it's not a bad movie. It's just that his acting type, like, is not super intimidating. Physically, he is, and I think that that's possibly why they cast him. But, like, you hear him talk, and you're just like, oh.
I don't know, maybe that was their purpose, that they were like, this, how you could take this person who is so unassuming and make him dark and turn him into something that's, like, even scarier. I don't know. I just, all I remember is the terrible CGI and the overuse of CGI in that movie, and shirtless, wet, crazy-eyed Ryan Reynolds. That's all I remember. And since then, they've made like four movies. Yeah, they're all bad.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them. I mean, I like Amityville Horror, don't get me wrong, but like, it's not my gonna be my go-to, I guess. Like,
Yeah.
you know, I'm more of a Hellraiser girl, you know, a little eternal
Yes.
suffering and chill, you know, that
Okay.
kind of
Well,
thing.
it's great that you bring that up because it's been announced that Hellraiser is having a reboot. How do you feel about that?
I have mixed feelings about reboots in general, of course. But it went really far off the rails in the 10 plus iterations.
Yes.
So I would be interested to see if they can kind of bring it back to the point. You know, like the first one, awesome. It's really about, you know, temptation and desire and pain and pleasure, but really, but that, like, you know, in these bigger, like, Cenobite senses, but also in the pain and the pleasure that we get from hurting each other, or gaining power over each other. And the second one's a little bit looser, but it's still playing in that same world. And in the third one, they just like throw it out, and it's just this like weird, almost like Freddy Krueger meets RoboCop thing. And it, like, the potential was there, and then it just like it, you know, balloon pop flying backward around the room. So I'd be interested to see what someone new has to do or has to say about it. Yeah, because we live in a different time. So there's some stuff. How about you?
I just hope that what I really want is a queer director. I want it to be a decidedly queer film. I want it to be, you know, in the style of Clive Barker, who always had this just thick underlayer I don't want to call it wasn't, I mean, he does kind of work in it's kind of a sleazy kind of I feel like all of the sex that he has is like slightly oily, slightly greasy. And I want that. I want people to, I want the new iteration to really lean into that and really lean into this kind of idea of, because we live in this time period now where we're talking about like, do we even have to have gender? Is gender even a real thing? We're living in a time period now where people are living with multiple partners and polyamory kind of situations. Like, our idea of sex and sexuality and gender is so much more expansive than where it was before. And so I think there's so much that you could do with that. And I hope that they're not afraid of just really getting into that undercurrent of pain and pleasure and BDSM and queerness and sensuality and the body is a gross, disgusting, you know, flesh prison. Like I want them to really go hard in it. So I hope that that's the only thing that I'm hoping is yeah, a really queer director that goes hard into that. You gotta, right? I mean,
I completely agree. And I think that one w avenue to success that would be maybe would piss off some fanboys, but like when I was really struck when you said that Barker's kind of sexuality is always oily. And I mean, I think it's really informed what and why he had such impact on a mainstream level is he was looking at being part of the queer community in a time when it was incredibly under the radar. And getting what you desired would require great compromise, whether it be to your safety or to your, you know, to your pocketbook. Like it was a strange and different world. And so I think in this world, finding the version of that that's real for our generation, the thing that we don't want to talk about, because we, like you said, we're polyamorous, we're queer, we're out there, we're doing our thing, and we're not afraid. So what is the new? And if they can tap into that, they're gonna have a truly horrifying film for us right now.
What is the current idea of taboos, of body taboos? It's definitely not the same as it was. What do you write this in, like the late 80s, something like that? You know, like over 30 years ago. It's definitely not the same. And so if somebody can figure that out versus just like a straight reboot of just like, we're just gonna find another Pinhead, we're just gonna do body horror and flesh ripping. Like, no, like, let's really, if you're gonna reboot it, like, do something with it, you know? So I'm excited about that, and I'm actually really excited about the Child's Play reboot, which
Okay,
is
yeah,
a hot take.
the
The
movie
movie.
or the TV show? Okay, yeah, sure. I have kind of avoided it. I haven't heard Mark Hamill's voice yet. I felt a little, not betrayed, but I felt a little tricked because at first I was like, okay, straight people, like you do your own thing. I'm sticking with Don Mancini and we're making a TV show and you're not invited. But then they were like, and we have Mark Hamill. I was like, dang it. And but ultimately, that's not really fair to the filmmakers because these films are coming from huge places with lots of influence. And when you get down to the writers and the directors and the those are passionate people who want to make a good product and tell a good story. So yeah, I can get down and Aubrey Plaza is in it. Get out of here.
I'm stuck, right? Because I have been really disappointed in the last few years of Child's Play movies. They are really, I saw the last one, Cult of Chucky. So it was bad. It was not even in a good way. I don't think I've liked any of them besides Bride of Chucky was like the last movie that I really liked. They've been bad. And so when I heard that they were rebooting it, I was like, okay, I'm interested in that because I don't like the way that they've been going so far. Maybe a course correction, a hard course correction is what they need right now. And I did hear about all the things that they were doing without the permission of the original creator of the franchise. It's just so hard because of the fact that I don't like where he's been taking it recently. And I am Once they were like, it's Aubrey Plaza, it's Brian Tyree Henry, who's a great actor, and it's Mark Hamill, and we're gonna, I just, I was, God, that sound, I'm just in. And then the posters came out, and they were like the opposite posters of the Toy Story posters.
That was genius.
So smart. And this whole idea of like an AI toy gone bad, is also very terrifying for me. I'm super paranoid about like what are our electronics gathering from us. And so I'm interested in it. I definitely have heard both sides of people being like, I absolutely will not support this movie. And the thing is, though, is that I don't think most people know the or aren't that insider in the horror thing to know what's going on with the rights and the ownership. And I think they'll just go see it, you know.
Totally. And to a degree, I mean, unless you have, if your principals tell you not to see something, of course you shouldn't see it. But like for me, I try to think about my money as a vote. And so, I'm still gonna vote with my money and I'm gonna check it out because in a way I'm like, damn it, watch this be the best one we've had in a while. But and I'll vote with my money and support Don's TV show too. And we can all play with these archetypes.
Speaking of TV shows, you said that you watched The Twilight Zone.
Yes, I'm two episodes in, so I'm woefully behind. But yes, I have seen the first two.
And what do you think of the new Twilight Zone?
It's I have a couple drawbacks, but the thing that's the most refreshing is that it's a more diverse world. That's like so nice to see. What an incredible and like significant for our time, but also like beautifully insignificant because the stories stay the same. Like we're one people, right? So like all these idiots who have issue with diversity and casting, hopefully they can watch a show like this and realize that like you can tell all sorts of stories with all sorts of people and it's okay. And that there's also stories that resonate with certain audiences more and those deserve to be heard too, right? So all of that is awesome. The hour runtime is a little in these first two episodes felt a little long, I'll be honest. Like I felt like I got it. I was like, I get it, Camille, you're We got, but yeah. Oh, spoiler, I guess. But yeah, it's ultimately it's such a great exploration, and I want to see more because two isn't really enough. But if it's been well, I think you have the news on what might be coming next for the show. But yeah.
Well, it was just announced that they've gotten greenlit for season two, which I'm very excited about. I've been really liking it so far. I'm a huge Twilight Zone fan. They do the thing on the Sci-Fi Channel every New Year's where they show like 24 hours of the Twilight Zone, and I watch it every year. It's my favorite, most influential. I think it's one of the best TV shows ever made.
Agreed.
They had a really high bar to climb. I mean, the standard for the show, one is they had a really high bar, but it's also because of the fact that we are nostalgic about it. So in our minds, we have this sort of high understanding. But when the Twilight Zone first ran originally, it was not popular. It was definitely kind of a niche kind of a show when it first ran. And I feel like it's the same thing here, where they're trying to figure out what's the audience, who's the audience. I love the direction. I love that they're like, we're going to put in this whole cast of people, diverse people. We're going to get diverse directors, diverse writers to write about themselves. And I really like it. I think that maybe some people expected it to be like Black Mirror and to be a little edgier than what it is. And I'm like, well, it's CBS, it's your grandma's CBS. Like, even though it's online, it's still CBS, so they really can't do, a lot of stuff. And so it's not edgy. And that, and if you watch the original Twilight Zone, I think it was maybe edgy for its time period, but ultimately the stories are about like humans are good at their very core. And if you just tap into the common good of all humankind, we can get along. And once you stop doing that, then it's going to go awry. And so I think that they're really trying to tap into this optimistic, not optimistic, but less edgy, less dark kind of a thing. And I really appreciate that. And I think people are sort of missing that from the conversation. But I mean, I like everything that Jordan Peele does. I'm just a fan. And I think by season two, they're going to hit that stride and they're going to come together, So I'm super excited about it. Another thing that just came out this week was It Chapter Two trailer. Were you a fan of that at all?
I enjoyed the first movie. That sounds so I'm a horror fan, but like I don't know if it was really scary, frankly.
Okay, that's a hot take.
Okay, is it? Okay. Here, hear me out. So I definitely felt it's a horror movie, of course, and it was like it had a lot of that 80s kid adventure, like for real though, where there's danger, there's not nobody has plot armor. And I loved all of that. I loved Pennywise, but I just like am real fatigued on fast moving and bass drops. And they went all in with that.
I don't know if it's just what's his name, Bill Skarsgård's face that simultaneously disturbs and arouses me. I'm like so confused. But he had some just very odd movements that I thought was really interesting. And I can't remember the name of the director off the top of my head, but he did this movie called Mama before, which also the movie part of it didn't really just get me, but the movements of his characters, some of his special effects really got me. And there were definitely parts of it to where I'm like, okay, this guy is he's got a good visual he's got good a good visual eye, And he can point out, like, okay, this is a scary visual. And I can kind of curate these scary visuals, which I really, really appreciate. And so, I mean, I very rarely ever jump in movies. And it got me. I can't believe I screamed. It was so bizarre.
What moment?
Oh my God. It was the part where they're watching the home movie in the basement. And it like pops out of the screen suddenly, and that got me. I like a fool, my heart stopped. I never do that, but that I don't know what that got me. And I went to go see it with Colleen, a mutual friend of ours, and the entire movie she's like, when are they going to turn into adults? What the movie's halfway done, they're not adults yet. When are they going to turn into adults? Movie. And I'm like, Colleen, I don't think they're gonna turn into adults yet. I think they're gonna split it in half. She's like, movie's already halfway over. They're not adults yet. This movie's doing the whole movie.
You know, it's funny that you said, it's very funny because I did have, it got me one time, and I don't know that I was scared, but it got me. It wasn't the same as you, although that scale difference was crazy.
Yes, that scared me.
But what happened? So I saw it with Amy Simon, another mutual friend of ours,
Yes.
and I was just really deep in it, and it was great because Amy is really good at just like letting go of her preconceived notions. This is why she makes such a great critic. Is she'll just go in and she has the time that they're giving her, you know? And like that doesn't mean she loves every movie, but she really goes on that ride. So I was already like vibing off that energy, and I was really into it, and I don't really know how we get there, but I guess maybe Beverly fights her dad off and she goes into the bathroom and then she turns around and Pennywise grabs her by the neck. And I just did not expect to see that on screen. I kind of thought she'd be absconded off screen and then we'd find out. And I definitely was like, ah, let some, made some noise.
Yeah, that movie really, I mean, I think the casting for it is a really good, really great casting, and I'm really excited for the adult actors to see what they do. Especially Bill Hader. Bill Hader keeps surprising me, like in every new thing that he takes on. And so I'm really excited for that. And then also they have this actor who is most famously known for being the Old Spice guy.
Oh, yeah, I love him.
And he, to me, is a great actor. He really did really well with those Old Spice commercials.
Yeah, he did. He totally did.
And so I'm super glad because there was an interview a couple of years ago where he was like, I don't want to be known as the Old Spice man forever. You know, I don't want that to be the only thing that I'm known for. And then he got casted in this movie, and I was like, yay, you did it.
That's awesome. That's super awesome. Yeah, he was great in this. I mean, you know, as an actor, right? You gotta like, you get the role, you have to knock it out of the park, and he did.
I'm really interested in how to see him in a more horrific kind of dramatic sort of a role, especially since this is, I guess this isn't really a spoiler since it's in the book, which is also like 40 years old. But that character, I'm blanking on his name, Mike, since he has a bigger role in part two than he did in part one, so I'm really excited to see how they do that. And speaking of movies that made me jump out of my seat, Ari Aster, the director of Hereditary, I want to know if did you okay, one, what did you think of Hereditary?
Oh, okay. Answer question one first.
Okay, let me back up. So Ari Aster, director of Hereditary, has a new movie coming out called Midsommar. The trailer number two, I think the first full trailer, I think the one before was maybe the teaser, and this is the first full one, just dropped today to get, and it gives you a better idea of what might be happening in this movie, which is still fairly vague. Did you see Hereditary?
I did.
Okay, what were your thoughts?
I loved it. I mean, it's a incredibly well done movie, and I loved it. I felt like it was almost too hyped. I felt like it had a distance to it, but now that I've seen it again, and I'm like, damn, this is great. The distance between the viewer, the audience, and the film is a beautiful. Yeah, I loved it. I really did. I think that it was one of those things that I appreciated after some time away from it a little bit, because it was like the hyped movie of the season. And I actually never watched the trailer until right before. And I had been so like, I'm gonna go in, I'm never gonna see the trailer, I'm never gonna see the trailer, I'm never see, oh, it's gonna be awesome. And then of course I ended up having to see it, you know, it was a second movie or something, and it was one of the ones like previews for a movie coming out before. And I feel like the trailer like prepped me for a different movie in the same way that The Witch trailer prepped me for a different movie. I love The Witch. That's an amazing movie. But that trailer, like the marketing was going for something different. So I locally spent a lot of Hereditary really invested, but also kind of like matching it against marketing, which I really don't like. I saw Us with only ever seeing the trailer once, and I kept my eyes closed, and I loved it. And I think, I mean, the trailer's probably great, but I loved seeing it pulled and not knowing what Us meant. And so, yeah, Hereditary though, like that is a wild ride. And what I think Ari Aster does the best is the, well, I saw his short film, by the way, which we should talk about if you haven't. But yeah, he takes the stories just one slight angle differently than you think it's going to be, and it's mind-blowing for that reason. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I think that maybe it might be a good idea to go into Midsummer without knowing anything that's going on, because it feels like Ari is trying to not give you anything. He's trying to not really tell you what the context is. And I think for Hereditary, he was also trying to not give you much information because the movie just takes so many twists and turns. And that honestly made me like the movie even more because it was taking so many twists and turns. And so I'm so excited for this film. I think it's coming out of my birthday weekend, I think.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so I think I might have to do like a group, maybe a group outing or something like that. Because yeah, he has a really twisted sense of writing and directing and characters, and I'm super super excited for this movie. Also, Scandinavian people are scary.
Yeah, they are. Oh my gosh.
And the idea, it does remind me a lot of The Wicker Man, but you know, cults are scary. And just being out there in those fields, I was like, why are y'all out here? Y'all know it's not gonna go okay. Please leave.
Yeah.
So
I think
yeah.
culture is a great thing to explore, and it's also something that like really kind of I think resonates with modern internet culture and hive mind, and like I think there's some really great things to explore there. And I love horror that takes place in the daylight, and it looks like
Yes.
that's going to be fully lit the whole time or close to.
Yes. Yeah, I'm equally as excited about that. All right, Adrienne, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation. We've got to do this again. There's so much to talk about. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and also I think we're running out of internet as well.
All right, you guys, that's in the conversation where it starts to cut off, unfortunately. But I've put all the links to where you can find Adrienne in the show notes. So please, please check her out. And hopefully, we'll have her back again real soon. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening to tonight's episode. And I will see you in another 2 weeks. Remember, stay spooky. Bye.